you're probably like, this makes no sense. It's like,
yeah.
Yep.
How are you, sir?
I'm good.
But
thank you.
Yeah.
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 I'll tell you about
it. Yeah, it may not be the
actual.
We'll call the Public Safety, Security, and Policy and Finance Committee to order. Start with the roll call.
Johnson.
Here.
Wilmer.
Here.
Hillstrom.
Here.
Becker Finn.
Here.
Considine.
Here.
Dean.
Here.
Brinkey. Grossel.
Here.
Howe. Lucero.
Here.
Newberger. O'Neill.
Here.
Pinto. Evelyn.
Yep.
Ward. Zerwas.
Here.
Representative Dean, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
You know, I have not, but if you give me 10 seconds, I'll be able to look at them quick.
I'll make it.
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to approve the minutes.
Representative Dean moves the minutes from March 28th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Mm. Minutes are approved. Representative Hoppe. Members, the chair move House File 3958 to lay over for possible inclusion. There is a amendment. The A1 amendment, the chair will move the amendment. Representative Hoppe, if you could introduce you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment has been adopted. Representative Hoppe, could you introduce yourself and start your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Joe Hoppe, the state representative from Chaska. House File 3958 was something that was entitled to just sort of simplify this whole procedure and reduce the fee for people that are for banks that are looking at court judgments. And with that, we can certainly have other people come down and talk about it. We've got, I know there are some concerns. Mr. Elwood worked with on this bill. His language was substantially what we put into the A1 amendment to make it something that was amenable to the legal aid folks. And I think it's still kind of a work in progress.
Representative Considine.
The amendment went flying through before we really had a chance to chat about that. Whose amendment was it?
The author's amendment.
Oh, can we ask the author about that?
They are about to do that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Considine, good question, and the amendment went flying through. That is substantially Mr. Elwood's amendment, which I like, and it was when I had this legislation was brought to me by someone in my district that works for a bank, and he thought this would be a simplification of the work that he goes through on a daily or weekly process. But I always like to check things with Mr. Elwood because I value his opinion. I also check with the Minnesota bankers and with the credit unions. And with that, I can let Mr. Elwood talk about the amendment.
Mr. Elwood, introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and I really want to thank Representative Hoppe so much for checking with us, see if you had any concerns on the issue, and being so open to our suggestion. The amendment simply does this. We were concerned that if we reduced the renewal judgment rate down to such a low level, that it would create an unintended and kind of a perverse incentive for debt buyers to just renew these judgments over and over again. And as we know, the further away you get from the original creditor, the more problems happen, and so we just felt that if it's the original creditor, that made sense, which is in this case is what the bank was, and then we sort of balance the scales this way, and that's what the amendment does.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But do they not just add that on to their fees when they are collecting? So,
Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chair, Representative Considine, in our experience, that the if they would have to renew, by the time they got down 10 years, if they have to renew the judgment, the higher filing fee has proven to be a disincentive to renewing those judgments, because by that time the evidence is so flimsy that it's unlikely that they could actually prove it.
Representative Dean. Representative Rubin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Mr. Elwood or Representative Hoppe. So I'm all for reducing these fees and everything else. And what happens when a judgment is assigned, when an entity, for instance, like a business, sells and a new company takes over, you've had a judgment. And so if the judgment is assigned to a future entity, they still have to pay the higher rate now, or would they be able to pay $40?
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglin, it does say that unless it's the original creditor, they would be paying the higher amount.
Representative Uglin.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, have you considered, Representative Hoppe, about keeping everybody equal on something like this?
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglin, we're still considering everything. I don't want to pass something. This bill is going to be held over, laid over, and I'm willing to talk about any parts of it. I don't want to do something that's going to be counterproductive, and I think what we're looking for here is more or less a simplification as well as the lowering of the fee, but I'd certainly be willing to talk about it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Carlson?
I was just going to say that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Joel Carlson, and I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul. And one of the groups of lawyers that I represent are creditor lawyers. They represent the creditors in these situations. And we found out about the amendment last night when it was posted. And I just wanted to make sure that we understand what is happening here. I appreciate and have worked with legal aid on the issue of purchase debt. And in fact, in 2013, we passed a new statute to address some of the very real problems that were out there with purchase debt. They called it zombie debt, and people were making a payment. And we took a real effort, and Representative Pilstrom carried the bill, to get after that problem. That's not what we're talking about with this legislation here. Representative Hoppe's underlying bill, which we certainly support, would bring Minnesota into line with other jurisdictions. We can really find no other state that charges a full filing fee simply to renew a judgment. That's $360. Issues of evidence of the debt being older, that's all in the past. I've had a judgment that has been docketed for up to 10 years. You are not going to relitigate that issue. The judgment is there. In fact, if it's a fraudulent judgment, we have a statute that protects the consumer, and it's a good thing that we have it. But 548.14 gives a consumer the opportunity to challenge a fraudulent judgment. The statute of limitations on that is 3 years after the judgment is docketed. We're talking about a 10-year window here. So they haven't contested it as fraudulent. They haven't discharged it in bankruptcy. Last year we found out that people that wanted to go and discharge their judgments were being charged the $360. We fixed that and moved that down to five. What we're talking about here is a valid judgment that's been in place for up to 10 years and trying to make a distinction between an assigned debt, not a debt buyer, just any assigned debt, which can happen for any reason, so long as it's done by statute, which is 548.13. And we're going to say, everybody else, you pay $40, but if it's been assigned somehow in a business transaction or otherwise, you would now, under this amendment, be forced to pay the $360 just to protect your rights. And people do renew these debts, but they do it when it hasn't been discharged in bankruptcy and they have a belief that the debtor has the ability to pay. That's when they renew these. And so simply saying in that situation that the debtor is now going to owe another $360 onto what they already owe, this seems to be a discrimination that we really should think about, Mr. Chairman. And I did express this to Representative Hockley before the committee. We're fine with lowering the fee, but treat everyone the same. That's our point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And also, if there was a difference in the court, if the court had to do some additional work on this debt to renew this judgment, I understand that. They don't. It's an electronic filing. You click a button and it's renewed. It's the same for everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Carlson. I have not been able to get a hold of my constituent who works for the bank. I think I'm going to see him tomorrow morning, but failing that, it will be early next week. I'll talk to him about this, and I'm willing to continue to work with Mr. Carlson and Mr. Elwood and all the parties involved and see if we can come up with something that works out to be possibly included.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking at this fiscal note, and I'm wondering how there can be no implication if we're going from $285 down to $40. And I'm just wondering if this is the type of thing that's hard to actually make a determination on, and that it appears that the courts have said that, the amount of judgments renewed is unknown and cannot be determined, which, I'm trying to understand why there wouldn't be a fiscal implication with this. If Mr. Rawls could speak to the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, I did have a conversation with the courts about that this morning. I do have to say, however, the fiscal notes were inadvertently left out of my packet today, so I don't have one in front of me. My conversation with the courts basically revolved around the fact that there weren't a great number of these, and they didn't think that the amount of revenue or the difference in revenue would be material.
Got it. Thank you. Any other questions from members? Any public testimony on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoppe, any last remarks?
Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and members. We'll keep working on it.
Thank you. The bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Please keep working on it and let us know if you have any progress.
Thank you.
The next bill today will be House File 3260 with Representative Wilmer. Representative Wilmer, do you wish to make the motion for possible inclusion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 3260 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
I'll go ahead with your presentation. And do you have an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'd like to move the H3260A1 amendment.
And that amendment just changes the effective dates?
Yes.
Please, all those in favor of the amendment, you get the bill and move. The author wishes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is approved. The amendment is approved. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So this is the position of authority legislation of 2018. So the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault, MNCASA, developed this legislation with prosecutors from around the state in its public policy committee. The Minnesota County Attorneys Association supports this legislation. And this bill creates a look-back period of 120 days for position of authority. So a person in a position of authority over a child under the age of 18 is someone who's acting in the place of a parent and has a duty to protect the welfare of the child. So here to discuss the bill further is Caroline Palmer with MNCASA, and she'll be able to answer any questions.
Representative Lohr, go ahead. Continue.
Oh. I'm turning it over to my testifier, Carolyn Palmer, from NCASA.
Ms. Palmer, go. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you so much, Representative Lohr, for carrying this bill. We really appreciate it. I also want to thank the committee for hearing so many sexual assault bills and indulging me coming up to the table time and after time this session. We really appreciate all of your support and efforts. As Representative Lohr said, essentially what this bill does is it creates a 120-day look-back period, and essentially the way this would work is currently under the law, we have the position of authority within our criminal sexual conduct statutes. This pertains to teachers, coaches, anybody who's sort of charged with the caregiving or caretaking of a child. When you send your child to school, when you send them to sports, things like that, they are under a position of authority. And this particular part of the statute really applies to youth who are 16 and 17 years old. The way the statute is written right now is it says a parent charges somebody else with a position of authority. So when you send your student to school, you are giving the school that authority. We are doing a couple of things in this bill. First of all, we are also recognizing situations in which somebody might be assuming a position of authority. So it could be somebody who says to the child, I'm now your tutor, I'm now your mentor, but they haven't received that express contract with the parent to do so. This has happened in some cases, so we're adding this language into the statute. And then with regard to the look-back period, if, for example, a teacher, coach, somebody else has been grooming the student over the course of the school year with the anticipation that the summer holiday is coming and might act upon those intentions, this would have that look-back period that says, okay, you have been in that role in the past 120 days. We're considering you in a position of authority. And again, these situations do happen. So it's really just as basic as that, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you go a little bit more into that 120 days? Is it just basically summer vacation?
Ms. Palmer?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Costin, yeah, it's really basically the time frame that we came to as an agreement. And, you know, this bill has actually been around for a few sessions, and so it's been through a couple of committees. And this is the time frame that we found that everybody can agree upon. And it's a pretty good amount of time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Any other questions from members? Or anybody from the public wish to testify on this bill? Okay, with that, I will lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Hillstrom. You wish to move your bill for possible inclusion?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the administration's bill, and so with me is the Department of Public Safety. It really has some technical changes that it's making to the predatory registration and additional information that they're going to get access to. So I'm going to ask them to briefly go through the additional pieces that they would like that this committee cares about. Made it through civil law already. We talked about all the data access part. There was no audible dissent. And so with that, I would like to turn it over to my testifier, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Katie Engler. I'm with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I'm going to walk you through House File 3578. Section 1 authorizes the use of the driver's license photograph to locate an individual required to register as a predatory offender. Section 2 adds a couple of definitions that are used later in the bill. Section 3 reformats one of the list of offenses that's already there and adds some offenses that would be the basis for registration. Section 4 modifies the name of a form that's referenced in statute and directs that when an individual does not have a corrections agent, that they are to work with their local law enforcement agency in order to meet the registration requirements. Section 5 has several provisions in it. The first is to require collection of a DNA sample as part of registration. There's a technical fix to allow the BCA to notify law enforcement of an individual's need to register rather than to provide them with a copy. There are several changes about how we calculate the amount of time that an individual has to return the annual verification form. Counting right now is done from the date of receipt. It's impossible for the Bureau to know when an individual receives their registration or their verification form, so the changes are to count from the time that's on the verification form itself, which is the date of mailing. There's some new authority beginning in line 8.6 that authorizes either a corrections agent or a law enforcement authority to determine an individual's in compliance with the registration requirements at any time and at any frequency chosen by the agent or authority. It also allows local law enforcement to determine compliance even if the individual has a corrections agent assigned. The last part of Section 5 talks about having a year for us to collect the DNA samples for those who have not previously provided one. Section 6 is where we talk about the additional items of data that we would like to collect on individuals. There is one change to existing law, which is right now a secondary address, for example, a cabin. It's limited to those located within Minnesota. The change expands it to include that secondary address no matter where it's located. So a Wisconsin cabin, one in the Dakotas or Iowa, Illinois would count as well. Section 7 gives us some authority to use alternatives to someone signing a document, including an electronic format. Section 8 is about something called International Megan's Law, which is a federal requirement for individuals required to register who have to notify the federal government of their travel plans outside of the country in a certain amount of time. This information is forwarded to the federal government, who gives the destination country the opportunity to determine whether or not they are going to allow that individual to enter the country on arrival. Section 9 modifies some penalty language based on a recent Minnesota Supreme Court decision. Section 10 talks about the fact that failure to register will now include not complying with the new international travel requirements. It also adds some language that says that if an individual is not in compliance at the end of their registration period, their period of time that they were required to register will be extended for 2 years to give us the opportunity to get into compliance. Sections 11 and 13 are data sharing provisions to match some language that was passed several years ago authorizing probation agents to share information with child protection. This just cleans some things up to make sure that that sharing is actually authorized. And Section 12 clarifies that when a person does not return a verification form or has absconded, that the Bureau may make make information about that individual available to the public because they are out of compliance. And with that, I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Any questions from the members? Representative Grassl.
Not really a question, Mr. Chair, but rather thank you. I did predatory offender tracking as a deputy back in my county sheriff's office, and there were a lot of times where, you know, you're looking at it going, if this is all we're tracking them with, things need to be tightened up. So I appreciate what Representative Hillstrom is putting forward here.
Any other questions from the members at this time? Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I also wanted to thank you for bringing this forward. I know recently in Minnesota there have been a couple cases where we've had, I don't know if they were previously technically offenders, but we have had cases where people are kidnapping children and taking them to cabins and second homes, and I think that would be really helpful in keeping track of where folks are and when we do have incidents where we're trying to figure out if there's maybe been a reoffense, that we've got that information readily available. So thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is an A1 amendment, and this is at the request of the Department of Corrections, and they are here to speak to that if you would like them to speak to the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair. If you would be willing to see Commissioner Roy is here. Good morning. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, begin. Tom Roy, Commissioner of Corrections. Referencing page 11, after line 5, we have some concerns about the travel language, and some of our folks voiced a concern that this might lead those folks who are on supervision to believe that they can travel. And we would offer language that would speak to that, because we feel that that expectation is not reasonable. There are people under supervision who should not travel. And I can think of a case I had as a probation officer, a gentleman who wanted to spend a week in the Bahamas. He had a no-drink clause, and he also owed restitution. And my comment to him was that it would be difficult to monitor the drinking, and before you spend money on a Bahamas trip, you should pay your restitution. We also lose jurisdiction when they travel internationally. We don't have treaties with a number of countries, so I think it would be incumbent to have the language that I can now read inserted after line 5, page 11, 1.3, a person required to register under this section who is assigned a corrections agent must receive the corrections agent's approval for all travel. Nothing in this subdivision requires a corrections agent to approve of travel that is inconsistent with the terms of the offender's supervision. I think it just makes sense.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this was a department bill, and this is a different department's amendment, and I have no issue with adding that.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? All those in favor of the Representative Grassley.
We had that, had those conversations as well as a deputy relate when they would start talking about travelers, and I would tell them, no, you talk to your agent first before you start going any place. Otherwise, we're going to be tracking you down, and you'll be in violation. So it's I support it as well.
All those in favor of the A1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Motion is, the amendment is approved.
Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom, please continue.
Nothing else.
Nothing else? No other testifiers?
Correct.
Okay. With that, any other questions from the committee? Any testifiers from the public that wish to testify? Okay. The bill will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, members.
Representative Christensen, welcome to the committee. The chair will move House File 3885 for possible inclusion. Representative Christensen, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3885 is... I think a good step and something we can do right now to make sure our schools are safe. It provides for grants for schools to do security audits on their schools to figure out, what are some steps they could take right now to improve their school security. You know, some of these steps could be physical upgrades. And some steps are things, just procedural things that don't even cost any money. I think this is a good bill, and I'm happy to discuss it with members.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. Do we have questions from the members? Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why do we have two bills that seem to do the exact same thing?
Representative Christensen or Representative Jessup?
Mr. Chair, I think great minds think alike. The bills are similar. They're drafted a little bit differently, but I think they both get at the same issue and are good ideas.
Representative Considine, follow up.
Could we not get together and just make one bill instead of doing this together?
To the testifiers.
Mr. Chair, I think, and Representative Considine, I think that will be the end result of that. I think that's why we're kind of hearing the bills together here.
Representative, anything else? Representative Considine?
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah. You know you're on the same party, right?
Just to the testifiers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Considine, yes.
Okay. Representative Lucero, I believe you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to both bill authors of your two bills. I know that as independently elected officials, we have our own ideas and we draw bills and we may not know what others are working on, so I appreciate each of your independent efforts that are both of these bills are coming before our committee today. The question I have for Representative Christensen is, I'm just not familiar with the American Society for Industrial Security, and that's the organization that is referenced in terms of having to have a certified protection professional certification in order to qualify to perform the audits. So I'm just wondering if you could elaborate on what that organization is and their involvement in this process. Thank you.
Representative Christensen, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Jessup could maybe add more to that, but basically they're kind of the standards organization that provide accreditation in this field. The results that we'd be looking for here and the type of analysis that would be done would be very similar to what was recently done before the Capitol restoration, analyzing the security of the Capitol and the state government kind of complex here.
Representative Lucero, follow-up?
No follow-up, just wanting to know more about the organization.
Very good. Any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jessup.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My apology for being late. Thank you, Representative Christensen, for being here on time. And I will just say, Representative Constantine, this is a unique experience. It's quite a pleasurable experience, I will have to say. Tag team with a fellow representative, I got to say, that's not a bad, that might not be a bad gig to consider for the future. So, but it is encouraging that we both came up with similar type ideas, and I think that just emphasizes really the, I think for all of us, that this whole issue of school safety has been weighing on the minds, I would say, not only of my my Republican colleagues, but I would say also on the Democrat side as well, all of us. And so this is an initiative and an opportunity to push forward. Representative Christensen just mentioned that we had gone through, before I had come, really some a capital security assessment for this particular building and for all of that represents us as well as work in this particular capital. And that was why the kind of the entranceway out in front of the Capitol was removed. Now we have, it's walking paths out there, and that was part of the security effort. And as we think through that, if we can do that for our Capitol during all the investment that we made for the Capitol, then, we need to do with the similar, quite honestly, for our schools and for our school systems all across the state. I don't think there would be anyone here that would say that the lives of our children are more valuable than, quite honestly, the lives for all of us. So that is why we are here together on this particular initiative.
Thank you, Representative. Next on the list, we have Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to the authors for bringing this forward. I guess I find it striking that although we have double the number of bills as usual, we have not a single testifier on behalf of either bill. Do you have experts in school safety, the youth who will be protected? I find it striking that we just have the two of you, and again, double the number, but not a single person who's testifying saying that this is in fact the right step and the right. I noticed one of these is a blank appropriation, one is $2 million, but just assuming $2 million that is the right step to be keeping students safe. Anyone catch any comments on that? I'll offer that up to the two testifiers.
To the testifiers.
Mr. Chair, I represent Pinto. I think we've had a lot of conversations with school officials and school district folks, and I think we've heard from them. This was previously in education committees where those stakeholders frequent. But I think this is a thought out proposal that has been talked about with school districts. This I think is something where we would get a lot of bang for our buck for a reasonably modest investment of $2 million. Anywhere from 100 to 400 schools could utilize this this grant process and do things that and know how best to invest their money, as well as do some things that cost little to no money that are really just procedural changes.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So in the Public Safety Committee, often we do have folks who have themselves experience in public safety, and I'm a prosecutor. I often speak from that perspective. You heard from Representative Gossel before his perspective. I don't know the background of either of the bill authors, but I would say I understand the thought that there would be a lot of that this would be a useful thing, but I guess if you have been talking to schools and to experts in school safety, my thought is that I guess I would find it more credible with respect to hear directly from them. They say, look, this is what we need, than to be hearing from the authors directly. Obviously, we need to hear from you, but if this truly is something that's being desired, I guess I kind of expect we'd be hearing that from folks. And then the other question I just want to ask is, do you have similar bills to address audits and safety in the other locations where mass shootings have occurred? So I'm sort of thinking, would there be a bill regarding concert halls, nightclubs, churches, the prayer circles that occurred there, parks, and higher ed areas. So I appreciate the selection of this particular area. The youth were pretty protected here. I hear them asking for a lot of other things. I want to make sure, of course, that we're providing that safety in other locations as well. So just wondering when those bills will be coming out.
Okay. Are you going to take that one?
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Pinto. You know, I think we are on a progression here, Representative Pinto. We have seen ever since 9/11, 2001, you know, what was the first thing that we as a society did? We really focused upon airport security and making sure that we're never going to have a 9/11 happen again. That was probably step one. Since that time, I would say that we as a society have evolved. Think about all of the stadiums and all of the checks that we now go through when we go into a stadium, either for a sports, effort or else into entertainment. And so I like your question, and I look at and I say this is an evolving process for us all. And I would have to say that, quite honestly, that I think schools are really the next on that priority list. Perhaps they should have been earlier, but I think they should be up on the list right now. And we need to get a baseline. How safe are our schools? You know, all of us, I would say, especially those of us that have children now or have had children go through, the schools, we all say, oh, yeah, our schools are real safe. Well, that's because we're in a trusting environment. My kids are all grown now, so I'll give that context. You most likely have children in school, Representative Pinto, so I have to back my context up slightly. But I will say that there's often, we talk about it in communities, we really want a level of trust between families and between the schools for which the children attend, and I always felt that. But I can look now at a school, and I did. I went over and touched base with the superintendent, looked at the schools and so forth, and it's like, all right, I really don't want to look at it from this context, but is this school penetrable by someone from the outside to be able to do some damage inside? And that is not really where I want to put my mind, to be honest, but I think we are in a position now as a society where we need to do that. And the bills that Representative Christensen and I have before you is really, if we can do audits on schools, and again, some schools have already gone there, they've already really focused upon school safety, but there are other schools in the state of Minnesota that have not had that opportunity, nor have had the funding to really pursue that. But we need to establish some baseline, some understanding of where are we at today in terms of the safety in our schools. And it's not just the buildings. I know I'm going a little bit long here, but it's also, what are kind of the crisis management plans in place? What are the procedures that would occur for a school if they encountered, a disruption? And that could be a tornado as well as, someone coming into the school that shouldn't be there. But I think we need to establish a baseline for our schools. And this is kind of a first step to get after that. And to your point, perhaps we need to do similar once we really tackle the the subject will say at schools and to look elsewhere for other venues that are public venues.
Mr. Chair, can I ask
that of Pitol?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are these bills being laid over possible inclusion, or can you just remind me of the path? I'm just...
Representative Pitol, they are both going to be laid over.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you to the testifiers. I think I'm all done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next on the list, we have Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to address something that Representative Pinto had kind of inquired about having two bills in front of us at the same time, and I just wanted to let him know this is before you were elected, but when I was a freshman and there were about five of us that had different variations of repealing the business-to-business taxes that had been enacted the year before and found that that was a really bad idea. There were five of us that came before the tax committee with all different variations of it so that we could all be heard. Some of us had the exact same thing, but the chair was gracious enough, Ann Lynn Chesky at the time, to hear all of us. I remember sitting side by side with now Senator Isaacson, then it was Representative Isaacson. And so it is done, and it's not done maybe as often, but when it's a really, really important issue like this, it is done. So just so you know that when I was a freshman, that was back 5 years ago now, that did take place. And also I want to remind the members, too, that, you know, we did have a presentation, a pretty thorough and in-depth presentation from Homeland Security that has been doing these audits. So I wanted, since you're not members of our committee, I wanted you to hear that as well, that Homeland Security does a really great job at doing these audits. They have been doing audits. They had done, I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was over 100 audits of schools, and assisting them in trying to harden their schools and provide protection. So, you know, this is something that we talked about early on, and this is, I'm glad that we're kind of finishing up the second deadline week with this, because it's kind of come full circle, and it's good to see some money being put to that so that the schools can actually, you know, inquire, whether it's Homeland Security or someone else, to say come in and do an audit. I know I was just in the Maple Lake School about 3 weeks ago with the superintendent, and he wanted to talk about school safety, as you know, a couple other of my both principals and superintendents did. And they had kind of a cursory audit. So they had some local law enforcement come in and the sheriff's department come in and make suggestions and said, hey, you know what? This door could be propped open, and sometimes they are, so if you've got a bad actor inside, the bad actor can open up the door even though it's secured from the outside and let somebody in, and so you should probably think about that. And, you know, you've got these three panels of glass doors that are where people come in, and they could easily be taken out, and then they just walk in there. So he had some very concrete things that they were considering to harden the school and protect the students. This is the time that we live in, and I appreciate bringing this forward. And I've already seen in my district just in the last month the raised level of concern and their action in response to it. So I appreciate you giving the schools this tool that they need, you know, to further harden their schools and protect the children. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. And I might add that at NOCA Hennepin, which I represent, the largest school district in the state, has been doing this for the last year, even longer. We passed a $200 million bond issue. Fortunately, Anoka Hennepin could do that. But all of those issues are being addressed, and this will be very helpful, obviously, for other schools. Representative Becker-Finn, I believe you had something to add.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Jessup is the other side of my district, so we share a representation for part of Mountains View Schools. And, you know, I'm a co-author on Representative Jessup's bill, and the reason for that is that I really think that this is the time that we need to comprehensively address the problem of our kids being safe while they're at school. And I'm in my son's elementary school literally every day. When I drop him off, and I know that we had some bonding issues on the ballot last year in all of our school districts, and part of the ask was so that they could do some work around that. And one of the reasons I signed on to your bill is because it does include the crisis management policies. So just to, you know, it's broader than just the physical structures. We have to have good policies so that we're reacting safely for our kids. And I think in order to do that, you know, comprehensively, we also have to address guns nobody's actually said the word gun yet in this hearing, but that's really what, you know, we talk about it being penetrable, we talk about the fear that we have and the desire to protect our kids, that's part of the puzzle, too. And we're not going to be able to fully protect kids to the degree that we want to if we're not comprehensively doing that. And you know, and Representative Jessup, you spoke to, you know, feeling safe in our schools, and I think we very clearly, from the thousands of young people who came out, you know, just in the last couple weeks, that kids don't feel safe in school. And we have our young people telling us that. So I'm happy to support this bill, and I would just encourage members and particularly Representative Jessup to look at all aspects in how we protect our kids in school, because we absolutely do need to address this. So I thank you for bringing this forward, and I hope that we can broaden the scope so we're really addressing this problem in a meaningful way and the way that our young people are asking to be protected. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. The last person we have on the list is Representative Radin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the bill authors. I have a few things I want to talk about here, and I'm trying to understand the orders. When I think about $2 million, just I think it was yesterday in capital investment, we heard about a fund grant program that was going to set up so that schools could have the opportunity to get the money to actually do this. So that's a good way to start, but that was only $5 million. And I'm sitting here thinking, if we're doing $2 million for audits, it's likely going to show a whole lot more than $5 million of needs that are going to be out in the schools. So I'm not sure we're right on thinking about the money and the implication of how we would finance you know, these types of projects. But I also have some concern that Representative Becker Finn brought up, and that is that, you know, we're looking at trying to make our schools so secure that our fear of alleviating the possibility of a mass shooter coming in and killing our kids is somehow we're satisfied. And I'm going to use rhetoric that doesn't come from me, comes from the other side, is bad people will always find a way. And I think we need to have that as part of our discussion, to realize that what we're doing isn't assuring safety and security for our kids. It's not assuring safety or security for anybody if we move it to movie theaters or event centers or things like that. And part of that is because guns are very prevalent in our society. And as long as guns are prevalent in our society, we are always going to have incidences like this. And I, you know, appreciate that the chair was willing to hear this bill and have this conversation. But the reason that we're doing this bill is because of mass shootings, because of some students and an adult that was killed in Parkland, Florida. And it was because of a gun, a semi-automatic assault-style rifle. But yet, we can't have a hearing about that. So I think this is great. I think we need to do these types of things. But I also think we need to have that broader conversation. And until we have that broader conversation, I think that we're just, you know, we're just putting false security with people out there. And we're able to pat ourselves on the back and say, well, we did something. Well, we're really not doing anything. We're really trying to make our schools more secure, but we also know that if there are bad people, they will find a way. And if that's, you know, being out somewhere when kids get out of the school to get on the bus, there's an opportunity. So are we going to build tunnels that are secure for the kids to leave the schools to get to the buses? And now they're on buses. Are we going to make our buses impenetrable? What I'm trying to say is this is a little piece of a much, much larger thing, and I hope that we continue to have the conversation about the larger thing that is making our children in schools vulnerable and making them scared and putting them in situations where they're stressed And when kids go through training about lockdown and what happens if there's a shooter in the school, I mean, I could not imagine what that would be like to be a kid that's 8, 9, or 10 going through that and then having to go back to the classroom and learn. So I appreciate these bills. I think they're a little bit of a start, but I think we have a long ways to go.
Thank you, Ray. We have added a few more to the list here. Representative Gossel.
Thank you, gentlemen, for bringing these bills forward. It's a start. It's a start. But just like everybody has said, that's only a drop in the bucket. That's only the beginning. To say that the end-all, be-all is to do anything with guns, you know, that's just one little piece that if you did anything with that, like you said, Representative Beam, wouldn't make a whole lot of difference. So, with that being said, there's bigger issues that we need to deal with. Make the schools safe, that's a priority. I've been in law enforcement and public safety for many years to try to make those people safe, try to make communities a better place to live, trying to make sure that these kids can go to school unafraid of drug dealers, unafraid of predatory offenders of all kinds. People that would do them harm with weapons, by molestation, victimizing in many different ways. If we get on track and start dealing with the real issues, look at our society. Guns have been a part of our nation from its foundation. These mass murders are things that happen, and they're outrageous. And it hurts everyone. It hurts everyone. There are people using fire alarms to get people to come out of buildings when they crash into with a vehicle and start slashing with knives. We need to take knives away and cars. Doesn't solve it, does it? The problem is in our society, the degradation of our society. From when I was a kid to now, the changes I've seen, and then being in law enforcement, both under the spectrum of evil versus good, you guys have seen it as prosecutors. I've seen it raw and fresh on the front lines. Youth being murdered because they're getting involved with gangs and drugs. Right on down the line. There's a lot more to deal with, and guns aren't going to do it. Making the kids safe, you know, that's not going to fill it all either. We've got to get the focus on what needs to be done. And that's a heart and mind change in this nation and of its people. We've begun to accept so many things that 20 years ago weren't acceptable. But we keep going downhill. I'm speaking as a father. I'm speaking as a law enforcement officer, trying to keep my kids safe and trying to keep yours safe as well. If we get our focus on the right place, we can start making a difference.
Thank you, Matt. Well said. Representative Ward, I believe you have the last word on the subject.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate being recognized. I was part of several school districts in the East Metro area that met with trainers. I don't remember now whether it was actually Homeland Security or the equivalent of that. Experts coming from the national organizations after Columbine. So we had huge room full of educators, school district people, administrators, teachers, and some students going through a conversation about what happened at Columbine and what schools needed to do. And that was part of an assessment. And so it's ongoing, and it is a piece of an evolution. This is a part of the puzzle, a large puzzle that has a lot of pieces that we have, in some cases, neglected.
One is school counselors and other service agencies, support services for students. Seriously lacking in our schools. All of our schools. We have a violent culture. And that's one of the things I agree, Representative Grasso, that we really need to address. Part of the puzzle. Healthcare. Mental health services. Some of you know my younger son is an ER doctor, and we've had conversations about a shift doesn't go by, but he has someone coming in with reaching the bottom, whether they're depressed or whether they have an addiction problem, and they want help. And he can't do anything because there are no beds. If they're really drunk out of their minds, he can hold them for 24 hours and hopefully they will get some services. As they sober up, they'll be in a position where they can ask for help. And if they've got money, somehow there will be a bed that will take them. They'll find a bed. But they have to have money. They have to have cash or they have to have insurance that will cover them. And we're missing all of those people. They're dropping through the cracks because we don't provide the services that they need. So it is a bigger problem than the schools. But I do have one question, a difference between these two bills. And I thought, why, hearing this in education, why is it in public safety? Well, one of them says public safety and one of them says education. Department of Education, Department of Public Safety. Are we asking for money from both of these agencies, or if it's going to be laid over here, it's going to be in the public safety budget? I just would like a clarification on that, please.
Thank you, Representative Ward. To the testifiers, who wants to take that one? Representative Jessup?
Chair and Representative Ward, I would say at this point it will be laid over and it will be probably discussed between the chair of your committee as well as the chair of Education Finance to determine where should this best fit. I don't come before you and say that I have the answer to your question, but I anticipate that if this committee agrees, yes, this is one of the right initiatives to move forward with. Education Finance has already said, yes, we believe it's an initiative to move forward. We've had similar hearings in the Senate, but at some point it will be put into one of the two committees overall omnibus bills.
Thank you. Was there one small session?
A small thing, Mr. Chair. I just want to ask Representative Ward pointing out the difference between the bills made me notice that Representative Christensen's bill does not include the language that Representative Becker Finn pointed out about crisis management policies, which I would assume would be more appealing to all of us, I would hope. And so I just wonder if Representative Christensen could just, as the bills get moved forward, if that's something that you would anticipate supporting, is to make sure that the language does include the language that Senator Jessup's bill about taking a look at the full security picture for schools, which certainly would include the crisis management policies.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, I absolutely support that language. It was just, we drafted them differently. So.
No problem. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Is there anyone from the public that would like to offer testimony on either of these bills? Okay, seeing none, let's see, which one first? Chair will move that House File 3885 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And House File 3676 will be laid over for possible inclusion also. Thank you for your testimony. Anything else? All right, thank you for coming, and we'll adjourn.